Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. This is your host, D. Wells. This is another episode of Why Not You? And I am joined this week by Dr. Marvin Mitchell, who works in the mental health department as a triage supervisor at the Naval Hospital Camp Pendleton, working specifically with men. Not a career that he chose, but was orchestrated by God because he allowed himself to operate in faith and be flexible. It's hard to do sometimes. Dr. Marvin Mitchell is about to share his journey. Join me in this episode of Why Not You? Already in progress.
Oh shoot. Yeah, so man, so I know people talk about networking and like, how do you network and things like this? And what I tell people about networking is, if you are going into networking trying to get something out of it, you're probably not going to be a successful networker. Wow. Networkers who I've seen who are successful, and I think I consider myself a pretty good networker, is I just connect with people, not trying to get anything.
Right.
I'm just interested in people. Like, tell me about like where you're from and what type of food you like, what places have you lived? And we just connect just on that. And I'm not, after the interaction's over, I'm not looking to get anything. But then what'll happen is later on in life, something will come up and I'll go, oh, you know what? I know somebody that might be able to do something that what you're talking about. Let me connect you. Let me connect you with that person. And then you just connect them. And it's not like I'm trying to get anything out of it. It's just about connecting with people.
Yeah.
And so that's what I always tell folks who want to, like, how do you learn to network? You got to learn to love people.
That's it, huh? And because I think it's clear too, man, when people have like ulterior motives.
Right.
If their motives ain't right, it's like, what can this person do for me? And if they can't do nothing for them, there's no authenticity in the communication and what's being discussed.
Yeah, exactly. I remember I was just the other day with some of our frat brothers since moving down here in San Diego. And so I was just trying to, same thing, just trying to talk and connecting. And I thought it was going to be like a natural discussion.
Yeah.
But when it was a natural pivot point for him to talk about me.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. It just stayed talking about him. So it was like a 25-minute monologue. And so like you said, I was like, oh, there's no connection here.
Yeah.
It can't be a 25-minute monologue, bro. It's got to be, you know, it's got to be some back and forth.
That's right.
So I was like, oh, yeah, that's not a connection. And here's the thing about networking. It doesn't always, you know, it doesn't always. I learned something from that. Mm-hmm. What I learned from that was, this brother's a monologuer and it's all about him. So that's I put that in the back of my, you know, my Rolodex.
Dang.
And I'm not trying to get anything from him. I was just trying to connect. But that's like we were talking about earlier when we weren't recording yet, about being open to opportunities. That there might have been an opportunity if he had more of a back and forth.
Yeah.
There may have been an opportunity that would have come up of somebody that I know that I'd be like, oh, I know this brother. But now his name won't be the one that I toss.
Dang. And that's a cold piece right there.
Yeah. Yep. Like folks missing out on opportunities just by not engaging with people.
Yeah. Because why would you recommend somebody who's a phony person, basically? let's get down to the station. This brother's phony.
Right.
Or this sister's phony. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not going to happen, man.
And I'm about to put my name on you too. Sure.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Because then, Marv, you said this guy was cool. Now my name is out there.
You're right.
No.
Hey, man, listen, shout out to 06 in the house. But
oh, yeah. 1906, black and old gold.
That's it. But look, man, you ain't become no doctor for nothing. Sure. You see all these people. I mean, just in the line of work that you do, just serving people. And here you are in this position to actually help people find solutions. You know, why do you think it's important for you to serve and help people?
Yeah, so serving and helping people, really the foundation comes from my relationship with how Jesus sees me. And that, you know, everything that he has, I mean, he had the whole world.
Right.
Why would he I didn't think I was about to be crying on this thing, but man, you know, this me, why would he care enough to come down and right. save me? It's just wild. You know, when you, I mean, we live it down here in San Diego now. It's beautiful, Oceanside, technically.
Yeah.
Beautiful, man. You just get to see just God's creation, the ocean. We're like right by the ocean, how vast it is.
Yeah.
And you see like the master of the universe thought enough to come into my life.
Yeah.
And care about taking care of me. That's wild, man.
It is.
So when I think about that, it motivates me and pushes me to go, God created everybody, not just me, but he created everybody and he created us for relationship.
Yeah.
And so because of the way that God related to me, then I try my best to live out that relationship mm-hmm. with other people and serve them in a way, like we were just talking about earlier, not expecting anything back.
Yeah.
I'm not expecting anything back when I'm serving folks. Mm-hmm. I'm serving them because that's just what God wants me to do. And then in serving them, I try to, I don't know if you can hear the Harleys, my neighbor is out there. They got some Harley folks out there. So you might have a little bit in the background.
That's but right.
Yeah, so just serving people, man, and serving them in a way that I hope that God likes it. So that's really the foundation of it. Just loving people, serving people, and trying to do the best, man, and hope that God looks at it and says, that brother did all right. He did the best he could with what he got. He did the best he could with what he got.
And the thing I love about it, man, is that when you're talking about opportunity earlier, you taking advantage of the opportunity God is giving you. Where you have some people, man, it's like they're not in a position to recognize it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the way I got into the work that I do right now was I guess I can go in the very beginning. So after the Navy, got out of the Navy, was in junior college, and my dream school was to go to Berkeley. That was my dream school.
Yeah.
I only applied. When I tell people this, they trip out. But I did not apply to any other schools. I only applied to Berkeley.
Wow.
And people were like, you didn't have a backup? I didn't have
a
backup.
That's straight up faith. They'd rather do it.
I only applied to Cal. So I got in, but I found out that I took, there was an English class that I hadn't taken that I needed to take. So that was required for me to get in Cal. So I had to go to summer school. Mm-hmm. So I go to City College to take this course, and there's a wait list. There's like 10 people on the wait list. So I find out that the instructor is actually, she went to my high school, but she was older than me. So I didn't really know her, but I knew who she was.
Yeah.
And I played soccer with her brothers. So I call her up and go to her office and I say, look, I got into Cal. I need to have this class. I'll do whatever you need me to do to jump the wait list. She says, this is probably unethical, but this is what I can do. I work at St. Hope Academy and we need Black men to mentor Black boys. If you will agree to go to St. Hope Academy and be a mentor, I'll let you hop the list. Wow. I did it, got into the course, went to St. Hope Academy. At that time, I was a chemical engineering major, science. I love science. Uh-huh. I went to St. Hope Academy for that summer, working with those boys, and it changed my life. And that's when I switched my major to social welfare, to work with people. So that's what, when we were talking earlier, before we were recording, we were talking about being open opportunities and how an opportunity that I wasn't really expecting, but because I was open to it, led to something else that was even better than I would have expected. Right. And man, when I'm telling you from that point forward, probably before that, but definitely pivotal on my life, there's always these stories just like that.
Yeah.
Where I was open to an opportunity and it led to something completely different. Just man. And it was all about serving people. I never wanted to, I don't know, can, I know I'm monologuing right here.
So go ahead.
I'm being that guy that I said I didn't like. So. But that's what this is about, right? It's about talking. Because I have another story, but if we go somewhere else, then I won't tell that story.
Go ahead.
Okay. So the next story of how I was another similar one. So I'm in grad school at this point, getting my master's degree, and I met this woman, and she said, "If you're ever interested in getting your license as a clinical social worker to do mental health, mm-hmm. let me know," because she knew I was against it. I thought mental health was a way to put a Band-Aid on an issue. I was like, no, the reason why people are having mental health issues, they need to fix the root. We shouldn't be helping them to just manage and stay in a bad situation. We need to fix it. So I didn't like mental health. Uh-huh. So she was like, yeah, if you're open to it, you'll get it. So years later, I am working at Stockton CPS, and my boss says, "Hey, you know, if you're ever interested in getting your license, we'll pay for it." I said, "Yeah, I'm not interested in that." He was like, "Okay." I'm driving home, and God says to me, "Would you turn down free money?"
Yeah.
I said, "No, I wouldn't turn down free money." And so he says, "So why are you turning down getting your license and they're going to pay for it?"
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. I kid you not, after that conversation, I'm taking the very next weekend, I'm taking my wife's car to get the oil changed. I'm waiting to get the oil changed. And I see this guy, and he says, "Hey, aren't you Marvin? You used to work with my wife." His wife is the same woman who told me, "If you ever want your license, come talk to me."
Yeah. Wow.
I said, "Yeah." He says, "Oh, she actually has an office like a mile from your house. You should call her up." I call her up. She says, "You want to get your license?" I said, "You know what? My job just told me that they'll pay for my license. The amount that they'll pay, are you willing to let me pay you that amount to get my license and not anything extra?" Because people pay a lot of money to get their license. I said, "Can I just pay you the amount the county's going to pay me straight up?" She said, "Yep." Not only that, after that, she started paying me to see people getting my license. That license that I got that I didn't want is the license that allowed me to be in the service that I'm in. And if folks see the bio, all the jobs that I've gotten since then, working in immigration, working for FDA, the job that I have now, all those jobs were possible because of this license that I got for free that I never wanted.
And so I'm about to go back to the chemical engineering was something that you actually wanted to do. Until they said, "Hey, you want to jump up ahead, you got to go work with these kids." And then that ended up changing your whole perspective. It was like some people could be so tunnel vision on what they want to accomplish and not open to other opportunities that actually compel them to actually move and operate in just a whole nother realm, a whole nother spirit, man, where you're actually working for the Lord. You don't even know it, right?
Right, so, right. Had no idea.
And now you got God speaking to you, and now you got confirmation. This is what you really need to be doing.
I'm serious, man. Because I was always good at math. I was always good at science. I loved it. And I was good at it. So I was like, man, that's what my life is going to be. And I just knew that's what my life was going to be. And yeah, it was just a curve, man, a major curveball.
Yeah.
That I never would have imagined. That was, I was young at that point. I didn't become a Jesus follower until I was an adult. So I wasn't raised in the church.
Yeah.
I became a Jesus follower when I was like 22. And so when that situation happened, I think I had only been a Jesus follower for maybe like a year or 2 years, something like that.
Yeah.
So very young and not even understanding how God talks to you and all that stuff.
Right.
And man, it was just, it was wild because he made it super clear to me. I didn't understand it. You know, that whole thing with the teacher and the class, that he was, I had no idea he was like working behind the scenes. All I knew is I wanted to go to Berkeley.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm willing to do whatever you want me to do. Shoot, see some kids? Yeah, I'll go see them kids. And man, had no idea what was
the setup.
It was a setup. God, it set me up.
You know, what's the trip is that I think like if people were actually to see the roadmap and everything that they would actually have to go through to get to where they are before they got there, they'd be like, dude, I'm bowing out. I'm bowing out. But it's like through those experiences and the lessons learned and the ups and downs, the challenges and battling through these obstacles is what actually makes us and refines us. It's a trip.
Right. Yeah, man. It's going through obstacles and like you said, if I looking back at some of the difficult times, even now, sometimes I'll forget and I'll be like, man, how do I get through that stuff? Then I'll be like, oh, that's right. That's those times when I was waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning praying. Yeah. That's how I got through it. That's right. I was like, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
God remind me. But yeah, like you said, if I had known in advance and he was like, this, you about to, this a challenge I'm going to put you through.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be like, yeah, nah, I can figure out, I can get spiritually strong without that, but nah, you can't.
Yeah.
No, you can't. It's just like, you can't get big without working out. It's just that it's not possible. You can't get big without working out. You gotta work out.
I kind of feel like, if I was ever tested like Abraham with Isaac and God was like, listen, this is what you got to do. I'm like, man, that's a whole nother level of faith. Are you sure? That's a whole lot of the conversation before the act even happens.
Yeah, man. I think the closest I've had to something like that. So we were talking about this license that I got. So you have to take you have to do like 3,000 hours and you have to take two tests and the tests are hard. It's a little bit different now, but at that time it was two different tests. So I took the first one, passed it. And then second one, I didn't pass the first time. And I was like, man, I don't understand why I didn't pass it. And then took it again, didn't pass. And I was like, oh man. So I was like, looking back now, I know that God was like, he let me pass that first one because I would have been too discouraged if I didn't pass the first one.
Yeah.
But he didn't let me pass the second one because my attitude was wrong. I thought I was getting that license for me to floss. I was going to get extra money. I was going to be able to buy a nice car. And during that time that I didn't pass that second test, he was really working on my attitude and telling me that license wasn't for me. That license was for my family and my kids.
Wow.
So that's the closest I have to, you know, and that ain't even nothing. Right. But for me in my life, man, dude, I'm telling you, that was a, it took months, man. I think it took me like a year to pass that test.
Wow.
Because and that whole time, it was God working on me, telling me that I'm not only that license, I'm not here for me.
Yeah.
I'm here for my kids. And so I had to sacrifice my ego. And that was like, so Abraham, like when like you said, Abraham was up there. And when he got up there, so when I got up there on that mountain, I thought I was sacrificing my kids. And I get up on the mountain and I'm like, well, where are my kids at? This license for me. And he was, and I see on the sacrificial table, my ego. He was like, that's what we're sacrificing up here.
Wow.
And man, dude, when I sacrificed my ego, found out this license was for my family. Pass the test.
Your brother had to shift your whole mindset.
Man. And so that all that stuff, man, all the opportunities that I've had that this license has afforded has been about my family getting experience stuff and living places. My wife, when we first met, my wife always said that she wanted to live outside of California.
Yeah.
I said, ain't going to happen.
Right.
Now you see, actually outside of Sacramento, I was like, ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
And now you see we're in Oceanside.
Right. But before that, y'all was out in Maryland.
In Maryland. Yep. So we all these life adventures, man, that I just I didn't even see. I didn't see outside of Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no, you about to have all kind of life adventures.
Wow.
Yeah. Went to Puerto Rico for work. Wife came out there and visited me while we were in Puerto Rico, all on the government dime.
And check this out, y'all. This brother's not only speaking inglese, this brother is speaking.
This brother knows Espanol.
Yeah. That's exactly. Yeah. I can speak a little Spanish, and that actually is how that's how I often get picked to. So in my job, we were considered America's health responders. So we respond to public health emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever there's refugees, usually they're from three countries, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. And so they're usually from those three places.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to give folks services is in their language. And so since I can speak Spanish, then I often get picked to go to those places. So, so I've been to El Paso, Texas, speaking with folks, went to Puerto Rico. And in Puerto Rico is very interesting because when you're working with the government, they do everything in Spanish and they don't have a translator there. So I had to get my Spanish skills up real quick. And normally I'm okay when folks speak slowly. And if folks are listening that know, like Puerto Ricans speak Spanish like really fast. Puerto Ricans and Dominicans, they speak really fast. And they have different words. They like run their words together and stuff. Uh-huh. So it was hard, man. But you know, when you're doing it every day, 8 hours a day, man, the skills come back real quick.
Wow.
Yeah. Real quick. But man, it's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
I know that you were talking about earlier how, you know, we have to get to the root when you had that perspective on social work and the mental health part, and I really need to get down to the root of the matter. Why do you think it's like hard for people just to share and communicate and open up?
I think that they're really worried that somebody's going to take advantage of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it does happen sometimes. And so we get this guard up. But one of the things that I teach folks when they're in one-on-one mental health sessions with me mm-hmm. is how to recognize people who are going to take your vulnerability and protect it.
Yeah.
And recognize people who are not going to protect your vulnerability. So I think what people oftentimes they don't have good pickers
mm-hmm.
on seeing red flags.
Yeah.
They excuse them. They push them to the side because there's other aspects about this person that they like.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the things that we talk about in individual therapy, is how to recognize those things and avoid them. Because what we oftentimes see is they have a pattern of getting in relationships. And it doesn't even have to be intimate relationships, friend relationships. They have a pattern of getting in relationships with people, work relationships, everything with people that are not healthy.
Yeah.
And they just don't understand. So we teach them how to recognize healthy behaviors so that they can get into relationships that are healthy, which is they want. They want to be in healthy relationships. They just don't know how.
Yeah.
So we talk about that in individual therapy.
So it takes a lot of like just rapport building, just to build that trust level, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Just anything, really. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it goes back to just loving people.
Mm-hmm.
If loving people is at the core of what you're doing, people see that.
Yeah.
And they recognize because they want it. They just don't know how to find it. Mm-hmm. So when they see the real thing, it's they're drawn to it.
Yeah.
And they just want to come. They just want to say, oh, OK. So, man, that's the job I do now, which is I'm the triage supervisor in the Department of Mental Health at Naval Hospital Camp Pendleton. And all those jobs I did before when I was at FDA and stuff, I loved it. It was like high profile. It was like stuff I would see on the news. Uh-huh. And I'd be like, you know, you'd see, it was cool because it was a dream job. It was stuff you see. I would see stuff on the news and they would say FDA, blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, that wasn't FDA. That was me. It says FDA, but it was me. Like, that was Marvin that did that. Yeah. So that was super cool. Yeah. It stroked my ego, you know. Yeah. But I always knew, and I told my wife this, I was like, man, I'm loving this work, but I know this is not what I'm called to do.
Yeah.
I know what I'm called to do is mental health. That's my calling. So when this position came up, but I couldn't do it full time. Like there was I did it full time. And when I mean full time, like seeing patients for like 8 hours a day, my mind can't handle that anymore, especially with the refugees. Cause there's a lot of trauma, like serious traumatic stuff that they've gone through. And so they're telling you this stuff and it's heavy. It gets on you. So I can't do that full time, but I can do it part-time.
Yeah.
So God was like, okay, I'm going to give you an opportunity to run your own mental health team and do it part-time. I was like, I can do that.
Yeah.
That's the opportunity opened up. So that's why we came here. So I know this is like, I know this is what I was called to do. Like, I have no doubt about that. God let me work in, you know, DC and to get that cool ego stroking job. While at the same time I was deploying and doing mental health, but then he was like, okay, it's time for you to get back full time into what your purpose is.
Yeah.
So I have no doubt that I am 100% in line with my purpose. And it feels good, man. It feels great going to work every day. Uh-huh. Feels good helping people. Feels good seeing folks that, like you're saying, that they want healthy relationships, but they don't know how.
Yeah.
And helping them get those healthy relationships. Man, it just feels, it's awesome.
Man, I know it is. Just serving and helping other people see beyond what they actually going through.
Yeah.
And I know, like, man, I was just reflecting on my own life when you were, while you were actually talking, as far as like being able to like recognize and see some of the red flags and what are you going to do? How are you going to navigate these red flags? I mean, you see it, but are you going to put yourself in this position where you have to deal with this flag or
right.
just going back up? I'm like, okay, I see you. You ain't getting me today. Right.
Like you see it, no, yeah. what you going to do?
Yeah. But I think, man, everybody wants to be in that place where they're, you know, where they're healthy physically, mentally, and spiritually. What do you think are some of the, like the benefits of just being in that healthy place?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's waking up every day. I mean, there's always going to be bad days.
Right.
But there's way more good days than bad days. Even on the bad days, you still know I'm where I need to be.
Yeah.
And it's just, man, it's just so refreshing and just, it just lifts all these burdens from you. Because when you know that you're in the place and in your purpose, the pressure isn't on me. The pressure's on God.
Yeah.
And so when those hurdles and those challenges come, then you just go, okay, Lord, you knew this was coming. I'm where I'm supposed to be. So I know I got to work out, get some spiritual muscles, but we're going to get through this.
That's right.
So you go through confidently. One of my favorite quotes is from a minister at St. Paul, Sylvester White, Sr. Mm-hmm. He said, trials are tailor-made for you to succeed.
When I picked that up. I get it.
When I really got that, I was like, wow. Like, because, you know, the word tells us that God doesn't want us to fail. Mm-hmm. So if he doesn't want us to fail, and there's challenges that he put in front of us, then what Sylvester White said is true.
Yeah.
It's a trial. It's meant for us to work, but it's meant for us to succeed. Like, it's not a trap. God doesn't trap us.
Right.
It's meant for us to succeed. So when you're looking at that and you're in your purpose, when tough times come up, it's still tough. Mm-hmm. It's still like, man, I don't know how I'm going to get out of this or whatever. But it gives you a different perspective in going through it. And it can it helps you to not get in the depressed state.
Yeah.
I mean, if you get there, of course, I mean, that's why people like me are here to help you get out of it. Right. But then again, so then that's a part of that tailor-made test.
Uh-huh.
God has people with licenses and to help you to go, oh no, okay, let me look at this thing differently.
Right.
It's just, man, when you're in your purpose, it's a good feeling, and folks can just really, it's not a chore.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was telling somebody,
yeah.
Why would you work? Like, we all have to work.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you work in something that's going to pay you a lot of money,
yeah,
but you're still not satisfied, and you know that your purpose is over here, and it makes a little bit less money. You would just have to adjust your lifestyle a little bit. Yeah. But then your mental health is in a whole different spot, and you can't pay for that.
Yeah. Thank you.
There's no price tag you can pay for that.
Yeah.
But some folks get caught up in the money, man.
Yeah. And you know, it's a trip that you, man, as soon as when you said that, it made me think about. So in March, I got to go to Orlando. Mm-hmm. Because I'm a part of the John Maxwell certified team.
Okay.
And so this is going to be like my first conference, and I got to do a speech. And so I chose to do it on conviction and attitude. And part of that is talking about the people of Israel, right? So you got these people who lived in this enslaved environment for so many years. And even though they became free, they still had this oppressed mindset because of their taskmaster, right? Because the Pharaoh devalued them, and then he was just hard on them that made them think that they weren't worth anything. So tying that into work, kind of like what you were just saying, even though I got like a promotion, I was like, it's almost like a setup because it provides you with the lifestyle, but at the same time, you know that you really designed to be doing something else. But at the same time, I got to use what I have as a resource to help me get to where I need to be.
Right.
And I think sometimes, man, people just don't recognize that, or they just let that money and that comfort just get the best of them. So and like, I'm cool.
Right.
Even though I have these ideas and dreams and something that's really close to my heart.
Right. Dude,
I don't want to pursue it because I'm afraid or for whatever reason.
Right.
It's like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
And those are the people that we have to inspire and help them see beyond what they see in front of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This guy, I knew this guy. And okay, let me make the story more generic because this was something that was on the news. I don't want him to be identified. So, okay, so this guy I know,
uh-huh.
he was, what kind of job could I say he had? He worked at a prison.
Yeah.
So this guy worked at a prison and it made good money, like really good money. But he knew that his calling was to work with child traffickers. He told me this. He'd known for years that he was supposed to be working with child traffickers, but he was scared, just like you're saying. He was scared, and the money of working at the prison was, you know, paying the bills.
Mm-hmm.
And very soon after that, we were talking about some other stuff too. He was asking me some questions, and I was trying to help him out with some stuff. Very soon after that, before that, God was dealing with him with some stuff.
Uh-huh.
And he was on the tip of tipping over and going all in on God. And he was right there. And then just like with Pharaoh, God hardened his heart.
Ooh.
And he went completely the other direction. And man, this dude, very soon after that, there was a scandal at the prison that he was involved in.
Wow.
And he told me the way that he was, I'll never forget this. He said, because we were talking about some stuff at prison and the way that the prison guards treat prisoners. And he said the judgment, the way that he would believe that a prison guard was wrong is if other prison guards judged that prison guard's behavior and said it was wrong. So that's what he said to me. Very soon after that, and a scandal happened at the prison. And he was at the center of the scandal, and his prison guard buddies turned on him and said his behavior was wrong.
Oh,
the exact measure that he told me that was the standard that he was willing to go to. Man, devastated his family. Devastated his family. All because he was choosing to let fear take over instead of being in his purpose. And God said, okay, I'm going to go ahead and let you turn you over to yourself and see how that works out. That's a horrible position to be in.
That is. That is.
That's a horrible position to be in.
I think more people just need to think about the consequences too.
Yeah.
Consequences.
It's not always just going to be that severe.
No, it's not.
But it can be.
Yeah.
When you out on your, like, when you're out there living in your own purpose, you're telling God, I know how to do it better than you do. And so he's like, okay, he has his grace and don't always let everything happen to us.
Yeah.
But man, that's, and I'm thankful that he never, you know, when I was living in my own doggone purpose, I'm glad that he never let me get that out there. He always was looking out for me.
I know, well, right?
He's praying for me, so I know that, yeah. That's how that worked. The prayers of the righteous is availing much, because Marv was out there doing his own thing. Ooh, I was living on somebody's prayers and didn't even know it.
Who are you telling?
Ooh, man.
I just remember, man, talking to my sister, and we were just talking about people getting to a place where they actually begin to like operate in that zone where they feel like, you know, God is actually utilizing them, where they're being used, they're following their passion. It's like, I'm trying to remember the exact phrase that she used, but people just need to think about like Abraham, because I think people put a cap on themselves because of their age. And yeah. So they're like, man, I'm such and such age. What value can I bring to people? What can I do? I'm like, it really doesn't matter. I mean, if God called Abraham at that age at 80s,
right?
Come on. Or use Moses. That's what I meant to say. Use Moses. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, just like you're saying with Moses, we come with excuses. Mm-hmm. God was like, I'm gonna put you in this position. And he was like, yeah, no, I can't do that. And so God was like, okay, I got this solution. And then he was like, well, you know, I can't speak. I got a speech impediment or whatever he had. Yeah. God was like, okay, so I'm gonna let Aaron speak for you. Next. Like, right. But there's no excuse you can come up with, dude. I got you. Whatever you're gonna come up with, I got it. I got next. Yeah. And it is. I think, like you're saying about, like we were talking about earlier, with folks being not wanting to be vulnerable, it comes to, you know, insecurities. And mm-hmm. we look at ourselves and go, man, you know, there's a word for it, it's called like imposter syndrome, where mm-hmm. you say, man, you know, I'm not good enough to be in this situation. That can't be me. That can't be what God wants me to do. And God's like, no, I got you.
Yeah.
You can do it. And yeah, so it's a real thing, that imposter syndrome. It's not just in professionals, it's even in people's personal lives.
Yeah.
Just being insecure with who we are and thinking that we're not good enough.
Right. I think that's a sad thing too, man, when we just allow those thoughts just kind of take over, and next thing you know, there's all kind of fear, doubt associated with it. And next thing you know, you running away instead of running towards.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I remember it's on this imposter syndrome. So I was working in immigration, and at the time that I left immigration, went to FDA, I was in school for my doctorate. I wasn't done yet. I was still doing it. Actually, I wanted to work at CDC because I was doing research on HIV and the men who have sex with men population. So I wanted to work with that. And an opportunity came up to go to FDA. So I was in a conversation with, you know, FDA, like, oh my gosh, all these, you know, doctor this and doctor that. And so I'm like, there's all these experts. And I'm on a call and I'm thinking, man, you know, because there was some stuff that was happening in school where we learned about specifically with food and the way that E. coli usually gets into lettuce or produce uh-huh. is because there's, you know, when you're driving down 5 or 99, you see all the farms and you see cows. They're called CAFOs, but where there's like a whole bunch of cows. But then like right next to it, you'll see like lettuce.
Uh-huh.
And the way that E. coli gets into one of the primary ways E. coli gets into lettuce is because when the cows poop, then the water washes from there into the lettuce. So that's almost always how E. coli, I shouldn't say always, a significant amount of the reason why E. coli gets in lettuce. So I was learning this in school.
Right.
And now I'm in a conversation with these experts, and they're having a conversation about how do we think the E. coli got into the lettuce? And so I'm thinking, oh, shoot, I know they know the answer to this. I'm like, I'm in school, so we're talking about this in school, but these are the experts. I know they know. And they're talking about everything except that. And I was like, should I say something? Should I pop in there? I was like, no, I can't say nothing. Like what we're talking about. Yeah. Insecure. There's no way. I'm not even a doctor yet. And these doctors, that this is what they do. They know the answer. Finally, after like 15 minutes, somebody says, well, maybe it was the cows are right next to it, and maybe it washed onto lettuce. I was like,
thank you.
Did they not know that? Like, how did they not? What is happening here? Like, how did I know this 15 minutes ago? So that was the time in my life where the imposter syndrome, like how we're talking about these insecurities, where God was like, no, I put you here for you to bring your perspective. Mm-hmm. So when you have an idea, you say it.
Yeah.
And man, so then since then, I get on the calls. Well, not anymore, but at that time, I would get on a call and I would just say something. I was like, if that's on my mind, I'm just going to say it.
Got to say it, huh?
Yep. I just throw it out there and they'd be like, huh? And I'm listening because I still have, doubting.
Uh-huh.
Listen, like, how are they going to respond? Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. Marvin, I agreed. So let's talk about more about that. And I was like, oh, my gosh, like that was right. That was right. Oh, man. So, yeah, man, it's fear can be crippling, man. And we just got to push that fear back and just take a chance. The worst thing that's going to happen is they say, that ain't right. And then they just go on to the next. Because that's happened too. I say something, they'd be like, nah, I don't think that's it. And I'm like, oh, shoot. I just threw it out there. I was just thinking, shoot.
I know.
Everybody else throwing ideas out, I'm throwing mine out.
That is so true, man. Because I've been in those same kind of situations where I'm just like biting my tongue and just kind of thinking, should I say something? Should I just hold it in? Should I say something? It's almost like you playing double dutch in your mind. Should I go in? But man, it's a trip, man, when you just think about this conversation or like that, like you were saying, that insecurity.
Yeah.
That stuff can straight up cripple somebody.
It will.
If they're not strong. And then that kind of goes back to being in a healthy place mentally.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Especially if you say something right. So you got to be in a healthy spot to be able to withstand if you do throw something out there and people aren't feeling it.
Yeah.
To not let it even drop you even lower.
Right.
You just be like, oh, shoot, I threw it out there.
Right.
It took me a while to get to that point. Mm-hmm. I'm still not completely there.
Yeah.
But I'm a lot better there now.
Right.
To just be like, it didn't work this time.
Right.
But I'll be like, if somebody want to doubt at this point where I'm at in my life, if I say something that doesn't work out and they kind of give me the side eye.
Yeah.
Then that's when I'll be like, man, let's throw CVs out if that's what you want. Is that what we're doing? You want to throw CVs out? Let's throw CVs out. Come on, man.
Yeah, because that could straight crush some people. I mean, that could paralyze and that could make them think, well, hey, what I just said right there, they're not feeling it. So I'm not even going to speak up anymore. So and they might have a great idea or great comment.
Yeah, that happened with the team that I was working with at FDA. It was this was when I was in tobacco, and it was they have these things called working groups. So you have all these different disciplines coming together on an idea to give different perspectives. And so the statistics lead, very, very strong personality, a guy. And then the epidemiology lead was not as strong on her personality, but had lots to offer.
Mm-hmm.
So as the lead of the working group, And because my background was as in mental health, is part of it was on groups and group dynamics. Uh-huh. So I was able to leverage that subject matter expertise that I had, and recognizing that she wasn't talking, but she needed to. Right. So I went and talked to her and said, hey, you know, just kind of talking to her about it and building her up. And then I went and talked to the lead, and I said, hey, man, there's a, for the group to really function at its peak.
Right.
Like you're the stats dude, and your stuff, your bomb, mm-hmm. but the Epi has something to bring, and we need to get her perspective. And so there's sometimes I know you're not doing it on purpose.
Right.
There's sometimes that you can kind of monologue. Mm-hmm. And we need you to stop sometimes and let other people talk.
Got it.
You appreciated the feedback. And man, so for the rest of the time that group was going through, he really was purposeful in not monologuing and making sure that he asked people, okay, hey, Epi, tell me what's going on the Epi side. Help us understand what gaps we're missing. What blind spots are we not seeing on just the straight stat stuff? So man, that was awesome to see that group. Mm-hmm. Work the way it needed to be. And again, you know, in this whole theme of serving people, me as the lead, serving her to get her perspective on the working group. But then the overall mission is, you know, we were in tobacco regulation. So we wanted to make sure that we were protecting the public health the United States and also outside the United States with a very good, solid, robust scientific foundation to be able to judge and make regulatory decisions on. Got so that's it. Some of that stuff where I would go.
Yeah.
But the FDA said, I'm like, no, that was Marv.
That was Marv. Put my name on that.
Everybody's looking for that advantage, man, and how to communicate effectively.
Right. Because it is, man. It can really hamper your team.
Yeah.
Or it can really help your team.
Mm-hmm.
Recognizing people's strengths and blind spots and putting an effective team together.
Yeah.
That really complements each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And being purposeful about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal.
It is, huh? So I know, man, you be pouring so much into other people, like just daily and just working with them. What do you do to,
you know, when it's time for you? So you can actually recharge, you know? Did you get some personal alone time or what?
Yep, I told Pam after, I was like, man, after I talked to Derek, I was like, as long as it's not raining, we about to get on the bike and just cruise on Pacific Coast Highway. Just drive on the bike, looking at the ocean on one side, the city on the other, and we just find a little spot, stop, walk around, look at the little shops, eat some lunch, and then come back. That's one of the really good things about living down here is we both love the ocean. We love the beach. So that's a big thing for us. And then on a personal level, just working out, watching the Lakers, even though they lost last night. So sometimes it's a source of stress. It's supposed to be lifting me up. It's a source of stress. Oh man, yeah. So I do that. I like food. I like just tasting food, different cultures' food.
Yeah,
and just really savoring it. It's always amazing to me how different cultures put different foods together that I would never think go.
I know,
and
right?
Then you taste it, and it's just like magic.
It is,
man. Like Indian food is one of my favorites. And so when you like, who would think to put like yogurt and tomatoes and like a chicken that you put in this like clay oven and some spices and put it all together. And then you like, that's chicken tikka masala. That's bomb. Like who would think to put yogurt with chicken?
I don't know. They thought of it together.
Right. They thought of it and it's just fire. So that kind of stuff, man, I just love going to different spots and just seeing how people put you know, the creativity mm-hmm. in people's mind to put different things together.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, like I say, it's just magic, man. Just, so I enjoy food.
Yeah.
I enjoy food.
Yeah. Same. Yeah.
All right. All right. Hey, thanks for joining me in this first episode of Why Not You with Dr. Marvin Mitchell. Hey, stay tuned for part two. It's definitely getting good and it's going to get better. Hey, over the next week, ponder this question. How are you allowing yourself to be used to make an impact? On that note, hey, have a blessed week. And remember, work on becoming the